Transform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, sitting here with
Terry D. Kester, the Doctor of Sagacity.
And
he's not here.
Where did
what? Now that I recall, last week he wasn't really here either, was he?
He was here.
He was?
You
oh.
just forgot, Terry. Oh. Actually, Garland called me, let me know that he is stuck in traffic, and we will be expecting
him. Oh, that old excuse. Shortly. You know, change the dosage, Garland.
Hey, our listeners know that being stuck in traffic in D.C. is a really good excuse.
Yeah, it's an excuse everybody uses, no matter what. They leave
but it happens to be right
yeah,
a lot of the time.
Sure, yeah.
We are here live in the Golden Studios at WPFW. But this is our last studio visit for the month. This is the last show in May. So tonight.
No, it's not.
It's not? Oh, excuse me. Now, I'm ready for May to be over. Now, my dosage.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will try to keep track of reality here during the course of the show.
I apologize. I'm sorry. So we do have one more show in studio next week. That's absolutely right. In fact, we have one of our pledgers who has chosen the topic, who is going to be joining us next week. And I believe that the topic has something to do with the Wisconsin recall elections and unions.
And that's Ramey. Ramey is going to be our
guest.
Ramey's
going to be here.
And guest picker.
Yes, he will be our guest.
By the way, which means we got to thank everybody. And we really do. We had some great contributions. We really appreciate the depth and the breadth of those contributions. And those of you who are going to join the caucus with topic and or personal appearance, thank you.
And there's at least one person I've called who has not called me back. And so if she...
That's not unusual in your life, is it?
Yes, it is, actually.
Oh, I'm just checking.
If she wants to choose the topic and be a guest on the show, she should give
better
me
get
a
phone
call back.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But then in June, we will be back at Ben's Next Door, and you can join us there and see us
right.
there. So tonight, I want to talk about Wall Street. Because,
why not just piss on him and get over with?
Well, the question exactly is how to do that.
Oh, okay.
And whether urinating on them would actually solve anything.
Probably not, but it might feel good.
Because we now know that, a guy whose nickname is the London Whale.
I know, how can he? Isn't that ridiculous?
You can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't.
Bruno Exel is not known as the London Whale because he's a heavy set guy. I don't know, maybe he is. I've never met the guy.
I thought Demon was, or Diamond was.
No, he's not the London Whale.
He's not the London Whale?
No, the London Whale is the trader in London, Bruno Exel, who placed a $100 billion trade. Jamie Dimon is the CEO of J.P. Morgan, the bank under which the trade was placed.
I'm sorry.
And Jamie Dimon, until 2 weeks ago, was considered to be...
You mean the next Treasury Secretary of the United
States?
He was
considered to be the best CEO of any bank in the country. He was Mr. I play it safe, I don't gamble.
Yeah.
All those other banks went bad in 2008, but I stayed pure and firm and
good. He was a real candidate for Secretary of Treasury, right?
And he was also, 2 weeks ago, heavily lobbying Washington.
Oh, well, how unusual.
Not to implement the Volcker Rule. Now, for those who do not know what that is,
Most important rule we could possibly have.
That is the rule to basically reinstate something Glass-Steagall. Let me say what the whole program is going to be about, Terry, and then we'll get into the specifics of this trade. So I want to talk about J.B. Morgan and Jamie Dimon and the London Whale and the Volcker Rule and basically how to regulate Wall Street.
Topic one.
I also want to talk about whether regulation is enough and whether taking to the streets might be the best way to go after Wall Street.
Topic two and three.
And talk about really what street tactics work, i.e. Occupy Wall Street, and what street tactics don't work, in my humble opinion, the Chicago NATO protests that we just saw. But we'll get to that.
Topic four.
And then when we get to Wall Street, we have to obviously talk about Bain Capital and Mitt Romney and all that kind of stuff.
In 1 hour, we're going to do this.
And we're
going
to take calls.
Wow.
After the half hour at 202.
It's so nice to meet an ambition.
588-0893.
Don't call yet.
I'm just giving you the number so that you're ready when the half hour breaks.
Don't call yet. You just bother David. Well, he's taking it easy.
David is great, and he works very hard, and he lets me in every week, which I really appreciate.
David, you don't have to do that. David, that's okay. Just keep that door locked.
So I very much appreciate David each and every week. Let's start with the London Whale. So the London Whale, like I said, it's not Jamie Dimon.
It's not,
as far as I know, a very heavyset man. I don't know. Like I said, he's called Bruno, but that doesn't mean anything. For all I know, he's thin and dapper. Yes, Bruno Exel. Sil, I believe it is. Anyway, he's a trader in London.
A traitor?
Well, he may be a traitor.
Oh, okay, just checking.
But all I know for the moment is that he's a trader, someone who makes very large trades. Trades so large that they actually affect the entire market. And he was trading in index funds, which for people who do invest in Wall Street know is basically like the Dow Jones or the Standard & Poor's. Basically, you're investing in a large, large group of stocks. And the reason people invest in index funds is because you may not want to pick an individual stock. It's actually considered to be safer to diversify your portfolio and pick hundreds of stocks. And because the index fund includes hundreds of stocks, usually one trade, even a large trade, doesn't affect the index because the index is actually compiling several hundred pieces of information and putting in one. But Bruno,
unless
your trade is $100 billion, Bruno Ixel placed a single $100 billion trade, actually several trades, totaling $100 billion. And he got to the point where he was actually affecting the index. His own trades were affecting the index, and what he was doing was actually changing the index and making it different from the underlying stocks that it represents.
Wait. I mean, this is all true about the index, but, oh, who's this? I mean, wait. David, lock that door. Keep that door locked, David. Doggone.
Garland apparently got through the traffic. Yeah. We welcome you, Garland.
Yeah, welcome. We missed you. We really did. Yeah.
Yeah, even though Terry was completely blaming you and saying it was all an excuse, I defended you and said traffic in D.C. is hell.
Well, sure. You're a good man, Mark.
Jeez,
I don't care what Terry says when you're not around.
You know, I mean, I'm the only guy to spend on time consistently, guys. I want my gold star.
That's because you live here at the studio.
The rest of us have lives apart from this show,
Terry.
Oh, really?
Yes.
But anyway, you know, I mean, we're blaming the London Whale and all that. But it's really about hedge funds. And it's really about credit default stocks.
It is all about that. Let me give the facts.
The facts, all right. But I mean, let's face it. It's about the fact we don't have any regulation of any meaning.
Of course it is.
Because the bankers met with Obama and everybody else and said, we don't want regulation. Don't get me started.
Where's his muzzle? Did you break his muzzle, Garland?
Darn, I left it in the car.
That's why you were late.
Let me finish laying it out, and then we will. I assure you, Terry, we will get there.
Okay. We will get there. I just want the public to know the reality here before we get distorted again, and you think it's the last Tuesday in May, which it's not.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, go ahead, Mark.
He actually distorted, because people need to know what's actually going on. People say, oh, it was a big complicated swap. Let's talk what he was doing. He was betting so much on this index that he actually distorted the index and made it different from the underlying stocks it was representing. And so very clever Wall Street people saw that he was doing this. They could see the whale coming, apparently. Mm-hmm. And they made something that's very difficult to do in Wall Street. They made absolute guaranteed bets against him. Because when one person is betting $100 billion in one direction, it's very easy to take the other side of the transaction. And the reason I give the details of this trade, which you don't find in many publications, I got to say, I had to look really hard to find it, is because there seems to be this idea, and this is what Jamie Dimon was selling to the regulators on Wall Street. He was saying, look, we're not trying to gamble. We're not going to Vegas. We're not speculating.
Yeah.
He said, we're merely hedging.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, JP Morgan had $100 billion in corporate bonds, and they wanted to protect them in case the overall economy went up or down. The problem with that is that the amount he was betting was so large that he couldn't properly hedge. It was impossible, because if the goal of hedging, the goal of credit default swaps, and for those of you who don't remember what those are, that's basically a bet that you get insurance if another person fails to pay you. So I buy this instrument, I buy this security, it's supposed to pay me, and if that guy goes bankrupt, I have this insurance that we don't call insurance because insurance is regulated.
Which is what took AIG down.
It's exactly what took AIG down.
In fact, the risk manager at AIG is the risk manager at J.P. Morgan.
Yes, Ellen.
The same woman who screwed it up then.
I believe her name's Ellen Hunter, was on the board of both You can't make this stuff up. You can't make that stuff up.
Why wouldn't they hire her with the great success record that she has?
Yeah, right.
That's exactly right.
All she did was blew the hole in the economy of the world.
So credit default swaps are sold as this insurance. If this bet goes bad, I have this bet to back it up. So they say it's a sure thing. It's guaranteed to make money. The first lesson of Wall Street needs to be, listen up, Wall Street, there's no such thing as a free lunch, and there's no such thing as a sure thing.
Oh, now you haven't had a good bonus recently. Of course there's such a thing as a free lunch. What do you think those clowns are doing up there all the time?
Yeah, they've been eating free lunch, dinner, breakfast,
you better believe
snack in between.
I was just in New York. I saw them. I was down at Wall Street. I saw them
getting
free lunches.
In fact, you were probably
lunches.
Hedging some funds yourself.
Oh, yeah, right.
The only free lunch in Wall Street. The only free lunch
on
Wall Street is when they require taxpayers to pay for it.
And when you screw up entirely, like Diamond, or like this woman, you still get bonuses and you still get golden parachutes.
Well, that's exactly right.
Because the way
Wall Street works, and it's the way it worked in 2008, and it's the thing that took down our economy.
The way Wall Street operates.
It doesn't work.
Yes, thank you.
It doesn't work.
Fair enough. Good thing you got here to clarify.
The way Wall Street operates, it's like flipping a coin. Heads, they win. They get to keep all the profits. Tails, they lose, and we the taxpayers have to pay them back.
Unless they've hedged it and got insurance, and then they win anyway.
In other words, the old Abbott and Costello, heads I win, tails you lose.
That's exactly right. Now, here's the thing.
I have one quick solution I want to throw in this, because I've been inspired by the Kentucky Derby.
Does it involve pitchforks and torches?
No, this is real simple. Oh, okay. Kentucky Derby, which I love.
He already talked about urination on the air, and I tried to talk him out of it.
Yeah, we already talked about it. And the Preakness and the coming up Belmont Stakes. I just wanted to be available. I want the same thing to be available to us, the average citizen. If we can bet on horses and hedge our bets on the horses, no matter who wins.
Yeah, we win.
We win.
And we take insurance on our bets.
Yeah,
so that
exactly.
If we lose, we get paid
why
anyway.
Can't, right. I'm just an average citizen. Why can't I have this privilege?
Well, the Volcker rule, because you're not too big to fail. You're pretty small, Terry.
Oh, I've failed.
No.
Once or twice.
Yeah, I believe that you failed. I just don't think you're too big to fail.
Mark, I'm just the opposite. I'm too small to succeed.
There you go. So the point of the Volcker rule is to say that if you make these bets, you have to suffer the consequences. In other words, after the 1930s, we had banks fail. It was so big, it drove the economy into the ditch. We passed Glass-Steagall back in the 1930s, separating banks from brokerage firms, from insurance companies, recognizing that banks do perform a public service, and that's why we have Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation.
Used to perform a public service.
That's why we regulate them and make sure that they have money. But this whole idea that you can take insurance not on your house, but on your neighbor's house, and if your neighbor's house burns down, you get really rich, and oops, what was that match? I did not mean to show that match.
You just happen to have some gasoline and a match in it.
But you see how this would work in the racetrack? I mean, this could really work, guys.
See, hedging should protect your own bet, but because credit derivative swaps, anybody can buy them on anybody, you in effect give an incentive for people to default, to go in the wrong direction. And what's interesting is there was a study done where they looked at these things, and they found that actually credit default swaps don't make things safer, as the bankers claim.
No.
They actually make it more risky.
Because instead of one house burning down,
everyone's house burns down.
Here's the sad thing about it, and we discussed it when they passed the Wall Street reform, and that is
Dodd-Frank bill.
Yeah, the Dodd-Frank bill. And that is that.
The Dodd-Frank
I'm going to put on my partisan hat. Because we have a party that is a subsidiary of Wall Street, the GOP, when there were people in the Democratic Party who were making every attempt to get through some significant Wall Street reform, and they got reform, and they got some through. But the Republican Party, and it's sad because I don't think that we can get through the reform, that we can possibly get the reform needed to stop this, because the Republican Party will stop any significant reform that would do something to stop this. I think what we're seeing now is that we're pretty much, in a lot of ways, we're in the same boat that we were in
just
before.
4 years later.
We never got out of that boat.
We're in the same boat.
It's sunk once. It's going to sink again. Even though, but that's only half the story, Garner, because the other half of the story is Republicans or Democrats,
Democrats?
Democrats?
Yeah, that's a new term. Just hang on to that. in either case, I mean, they've all sold out to some degree, because it was a story in the Washington Post about all of the bankers and all the lobbyists coming to the White House, larger number than in the past, all of them coming down, to discuss the Volcker Rule and persuading, including everybody that was involved, including the regulators, to have an exemption because they wouldn't really speculate. And it's that exemption that they worked over, which, of course, they again speculated. So everybody caved in it, and never forget, because I'm not going to let the bum off the hook, is it's President Clinton that signed the law that erased
Glass-Steagall.
That was written by a Republican Congress and stuffed in an omnibus bill with everything else. But yes,
he knew how significant that was, and he's the one that signed it.
I'm not so sure he did know. I'll tell you this.
He doesn't know what it means.
I'll tell you this. After 70 years, between 1929 and 1999, it's easy to forget the lessons of the Great Depression. You know, for all that you complain about Bill Clinton, Terry, it's... You can understand how.
I don't complain about him where you screwed up.
No, but you can understand how over two, three generations, you might forget the lessons of the Great Depression. There is no excuse for forgetting the lessons of 4 years ago. Absolutely not.
But here's the problem, Mark. Again, the fact of the matter is that, the lessons of 4 years ago weren't lessons of 4 years ago. It was a continuing lesson. You know what I mean?
It's the same story.
Because what happened was,
over and over
again, for the most part, we got the Dodd-Frank bill through to address some issues. It addressed some issues. But some very significant issues that, such as the one that just cost, J.P. Morgan somewhere between $2 and $6 billion. Basically, what we counted on were the Wall Street bankers saying, trust us this time. You know, it was like Lucy pulling a football. Now, this time, we're not going to do it. And Jack Diamond was at the very head of the...
Jamie
Dimon was at the very front saying, guys, we don't need to do this. This time...
Trust me!
Trust me! We learned our lesson.
And the funny thing about...
That was so stupid. And here's the other thing they said. They said, that was so stupid, and we lost so much money, that there's no way we'd do that again.
Except tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Jamie Dimon.
Now,
is
take a kick at his football again, Charlie
Brown. Is that J.P. Morgan... Everybody says, and I actually think they're right, that J.P. Morgan is one of the safest banks out there.
That's
it actually hedges less than others and gambles less than others. And you know what? I actually think they're right.
Well, of course
which
they
tells
are.
You...
Because again...
I mean, Jamie Dimon came clean and mentioned that they lost $2 billion. Think of all the bankers who are hiding what they're doing.
Yeah, and when, again, it gets back to the same problem, because despite the Dodd-Frank bill, we still have no transparency. We have particularly no transparency whatsoever on the derivatives and the hedge funds. So nobody knows what's going on
now,
until it does crash. Then we say, ooh, geez, disaster.
Let me defend the Dodd-Frank bill, and not just because I used to work for Barney Frank.
Let me defend this bill.
It was a good try. Garland is complaining, and he's right. The Republicans won't allow anything tougher than it. That's for sure.
I agree.
And you're. Let me tell you what this bill does do. Because the thing about the Volcker
Rule
was
supposed to do.
It's in the damn law,
and they
it
wrote
is there.
An exception.
The regulations have not been finalized yet, and there's still
they got
time.
That exception.
The exception has not been finalized yet. In fact, all those lobbyists that you were complaining about visiting the president were trying to lobby the regulators to have a very wide door to that exception.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And what I'm saying is that there's still time for we the people to be heard and to say to the regulators who will make this decision, we want a very narrow door. And Paul Volcker, to his credit, the author, you know, Mr. Volcker Rule, the guy, former Federal Reserve Chairman, highly respected, worked for both Reagan and Carter, so it's not a Democratic or Republican thing, has made it very clear that if a bank makes a big bet, that it's got
That's
to be...
That's called speculation.
That's exactly right. They cannot... expect all us, the taxpayer, to cover their losses.
Well, and I think I got to say this. I think Terry's going to like this. You know, something you said was very important, and that was it's time for we the people to be heard. Okay. I think, and I'm not switching, I'm just going to do this as an aside. You know, people are in the streets in Chicago. People are sleeping in tents in Occupy. I think one of the reasons that people are doing that is because you say we the people, it's time for us to be heard. I think people do not feel like they can be heard anymore.
What a great segue.
Exactly.
What a great segue.
I think he wrote that down. I saw that on the script. But it was good.
People feel as though if we had a political, if politics were run today in a manner where the people could mass together and we could have our voices heard and that the politicians would react based on what we were saying, that would be okay. But I think people now are at a point where they feel like, you know what? There's like five billionaires and six companies that own everything in the world. And no matter what we say, the politicians, no one's going to listen to us. Anymore. Even if they do, there'll be enough of them that won't listen to us that they can block anything.
Which is why we got to get to the streets. I mean, you know, you're kind of romanticizing the past. There never was a time for any movement when the politicians weren't listening. They weren't listening for the suffragette movement until they were force-feeding the suffragettes that had been arrested and went on hunger strikes.
Were you a suffragette?
Yes, I was.
I thought you would be.
No, actually, just a couple of women that I dated at the time. You know, because I mean, you know. Anyway,
three or four at the same time.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Of course, you know, I mean, there's standards. You know,
that's just back when he was middle aged.
Yeah, that was
a while ago.
Oh, those days were so good. They told me there was free love too in the 70s. No, you know,
the suffragettes were in the 1920s.
But there were, anyway, but there were no free
teens. You're distracting me.
Yeah, that's right. Here, we've got important things we're dealing with.
I might even blush here.
You are, in fact. I could see it for myself. Here's the thing. You don't have to just take to the streets. There are ways to get your point across without ever entering a state.
I'll tell you how. You send
an email to your member of Congress. You send it to the President of the United States. And you know what? You could send it to the bank regulators, too, because they ask for public comment. And if the bank regulators receive thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of public comments, look, Jamie Dimon did us a favor. The favor that he and J.P. Morgan and the London Whale did.
Is he going to get a bigger bonus for this?
Probably. Yeah, probably. Okay. The favor they did is that they made this mistake now and not 3 months from now after these regulations are finalized. I submit to you that the Dodd-Frank bill is more than sufficient enough to have very strong regulation, and that we still have a moment in time, an open door, to make that regulation as strict as possible, and we can do that by doing our own lobbying and our own lobbying of the government. Now, that includes taking to the streets. I'm not against it. I think, frankly, Occupy Wall Street's a lot more effective than Occupy Chicago. But
yes.
it also takes a simple email to your elected representative saying, I want you to insist on
the
a strong Volcker rule.
V-O-L-C-K-E-R.
Just so you spell it right.
But there's one other thing to keep in mind, because you got to keep that door open if you get it open at all, and if anybody does listen. You know, you've got to keep it open, because the other thing that's happening, in case you aren't aware of it, and I'm sure most of you are in some way, if you go through and read some of the recent House bills, what they actually do, even though a rule or a regulation is passed, be it in the Environmental Protection Agency, be it in the Securities and Exchange Commission, wherever it is, they actually vote, and I love the language of it, they actually vote to prohibit funding. Not cancel funding, not delay funding, but to prohibit funding. So if we get Mitt Romney in there and a few more Republicans, they are going to prohibit funding of any regulation that might protect the people of America.
If you get Mr. Bain Capital in here, buddy, let me tell you what, that's it.
It's over.
But you know, something that Mark said, and that brings the other issue up, and that is Mark was saying, you know, people do need to act. People need to send people need to send emails and
phone calls.
Faxes and all these things.
By the way,
here's the problem.
Let's give out the number 202-225-3121. Everyone should memorize it. You can get any member of Congress with that phone number. You just say, I live in whatever town, and they'll tell you who your member of Congress is, if you're in D.C., of course.
for any real American who lives in the
50 states, you can call. You can get Eleanor Holmes Norton. I'm sure she's supportive on this, but the point is use that number. It's your power. Go ahead.
Problem A, people feel as though that their politicians aren't, that politics is so snaggled up right now that nothing can happen and that our voices won't be heard. Problem A. Problem B lies with, I'll say, us as the citizens, because we can't get people to stop texting on their iPhones and, you know, playing with whatever their latest electronic toys and, you know, looking out the window long enough.
Don't text me, Mark. Right. I'm trying to listen to Garland.
People, you know what I mean, Terry? We can't get people to actually get engaged in the democratic process. One of the problems is the democratic process is all screwed up. One of the reasons it's all screwed up is because people are so caught up in their own little worlds that they will not do the things they won't. As Terry said, people won't take to the streets anymore. Are you kidding?
Well,
they're going to Twitter.
And sometimes the wrong people take to the streets.
Yeah.
I actually think the Chicago protest did not go off very well. I'd be curious to hear what you gentlemen think. I mean, to me, it was unorganized.
You called us gentlemen, Terry.
Isn't that nice of him? Depends what you agree with me or not.
I mean,
they didn't know what they were talking about. They were calling President Obama names that would make the Tea Party proud. crowd.
Right.
They were trying to fight with the police and try to get where the president was. I frankly think that anyone who anarchists call themselves Occupy, well, they're not. To me, Occupy Wall Street began as an occupying Wall Street.
And there's
lots of other
things.
There's lots of other things to focus on and lots of things, causes we support. To me, NATO was not about occupying. There was nothing to do with Wall Street.
No.
And so I would encourage the Occupy movement to get back to where it came from, the 1%, the 99%, and go out and occupy Wall Street. If you want to do it in Washington, fine, but focus on Wall Street, because when you do that, obviously in regulation of Wall Street, which is Congress and federal government, when you do that, the American people are on your side. When you go and you call the president names and you try to invade the NATO building, the American people are not on your side, and you're not achieving anything with
Can you imagine the civil rights movement if it had had 53 different issues?
You're right.
You know, I mean, you know, that, well, yes, we're protesting for civil rights, but, you know, we're also concerned about we can't, you know, that the automobile dealers in this state, you know, are putting too much of a charge on shipping the cars. You know, I mean, whatever. I mean, I don't understand what they were trying to achieve at all in Chicago, and I'm more anti-war probably than anybody on this darn station. But, you know, what is being done in Afghanistan is almost an impossible situation to begin with. I don't know what more you could possibly do than to get as much international involvement as possible in trying to solve the problem. Anybody that says just give up and let the Taliban take over, I mean, come on, give me a break. You know, but somehow I don't know what their focus was or what they were trying to achieve.
And that's the problem, Terry, it's not a movement. You know, the civil rights movement was a unified movement. The African National Congress. We're talking about people who unified around a vision, and they were nonviolent, and they unified around a vision, and they all moved together, and everyone knew what they stood for. When you turned on, you know, when I watched what was going on in Chicago, people were upset about a million different things, yelling in different, and there was total disorder.
Organization. In 2006, almost 500,000 people, 500,000 people in Chicago filled the city's downtown to protest because Chicago had made it a felony to be an illegal immigrant. 500,000 people marching on a single cause, and they got their cause, and Chicago
changed
that.
The only positive side about it,
there is a way to protest. I'm not against taking the streets. I'm just saying there's effective ways to do it and ineffective ways.
But there is something, you know, Chicago is the city of protest. I mean, it really honestly is and has been for a long time, all the way back into labor movements and everything else. You know,
so I've read about 1968.
Even way before then with Pullman strikes and everything else. You know, Chicago has always had that kind of citizenry that will stand up.
Were you in the Pullman strikes too?
I was in the third car.
Very cool. You knew A. Philip Randolph and everything?
I do. Yes, okay, I do. Yeah, that's the value of my knowledge. I've been around
for a while. Well, I think it aged, but all right.
But I mean, so I'm encouraged a little bit by Chicago people having the guts to get out there and protest, and to some degree the guts to confront the police. And did you see the police? I mean, they had them boxed in and surrounded. It was incredible the way the police.
Police actually, I thought, had a good strategy. What they did is they didn't disrupt the protest. What they did is they took the leader. They took people who were either being violent or being particularly disruptive or trying to invade. They separated individuals from the masses. And
the same thing they do in Russia?
Well, the people who were separated. I mean, my understanding is the people that were separated were not for what they were saying, but for what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
But again, I wasn't there.
And you know, here's what happens when you get something that's so disorderly and something that's utter chaos. You know, you end up with that kind of chaos, and people are running in different directions, and who knows what. You know, I personally remember talking to a person, and this was upsetting to me, who was involved in the Occupy movement at one point, and this person, we were talking about. You know, I was saying, you know, civil rights movement, blah blah blah, Gandhi, etc. And this person was saying there has to be this person was an anarchist saying they're pro violence.
Yeah, that doesn't solve anything.
How in the world, Terry? Tell me, how do you call yourself anti war?
And then support violence.
And then support violence.
Exactly.
All
three of us were out at McPherson Square. All three of us support the Occupy movement. Yep. I want to be very, very clear. I think Occupy Wall Street is a great thing and very much brought to the people's attention the abuses of Wall Street and the 1% abusing the 99%.
Yep.
I support the Occupy movement. I'm just saying that people in Chicago, I don't think that the Occupy movement.
But, you know, somehow there's something else has to happen, and I don't know exactly what it is. I mean, you know, it has to be probably, and I don't like to say this, but painful. You know, know, what really helped the Occupy movement more probably than anything else was seeing those, and I think I've said it before, those people pepper sprayed in California. And you saw the brutality of the establishment against people who were doing nothing.
Those people were nonviolent, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and that's the same thing that drove and empowered the civil rights movement. It's the same thing that empowered the,
Did you see the movie Gandhi?
That's why Martin Luther King succeeded, because they were nonviolent in the face of some horrible, horrible threats.
Right.
All right, listen.
Which
we
means one quick thing that, you know, sooner or later the Occupy movement, and sooner better be sooner, has to accept some leadership.
Wow. All right, so the number is 202-588-0893. You can join us and comment on Wall Street. How do we finally get it regulated? What do you think about the London Whale? And when we come back, I want
Even the Chicago. They might wonder if somebody might want to.
And when we come back, yes, I want to briefly compliment the NAACP. We'll do that when we come back.
Yes, indeed.
Have you been to our website? It's WPFW.org. Check out our schedule. Learn of upcoming shows and events that we'll broadcast, what's going on in our community, and more. That's WPFW.org. When you check out our Facebook website by putting in our call letters, WPFW, in the Facebook search window, you know you will get the real PFW when you see Duke Ellington and our Champlain Street address. So remember, WPFW.org for our website and our Facebook site under our call letters. WPFW serves the collective needs and imagination of our members and the community. WPFW, your station, your world.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine with...
Jamie Dimon. Yeah.
You are not Jamie Dimon.
He's got a little more money than I do.
Yeah. Terry D. Kester.
And we are the Raucous Caucus. And we are now going to take your calls at 202-580-893. But before we do, and we get back to our topic of Wall Street, I just got to take a few moments to compliment the nation's oldest civil rights organization, the NAACP, whose 64-member board voted 62-2. The executive board was unanimous. Mm-hmm. The 64-member entire board, 62-2. That's dramatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
To not only embrace marriage equality, but to recognize that it is a right under the Constitution. This is not a state right. They actually went further than President Obama and recognized that it's under the 14th Amendment. It is equal protection for all. And they went further than that, the 62 out of 64. They promised to, quote, oppose any national, state, local policy or legislative initiative that seeks to codify discrimination or hate into the law or remove the constitutional rights of LGBT citizens.
They're going to be busy since there are 30 states that have laws against that.
I was very, very proud of the NAACP. I was proud of the almost unanimous
and
vote.
And who made that happen?
A lot of Benjamin. Well, President Obama.
President Obama obviously made that happen.
John Lewis, many of us, of course, know John Lewis, who got marched in from Seminole to Montgomery, and he's a member. He's terrific. I've actually worked with him in Congress. He's the most humble man.
Oh, he's awesome.
I got to tell you something. There are civil rights leaders, who I will not name, who are not the most humble people in the world.
I will name them.
Terry.
John Lewis. I once saw John Lewis. I remember he was getting a suit at a department store, and I went up to him because I'd worked with him in Congress, and said hello, just tell him what a wonderful person he is. And he's just the kindest, gentlest soul. This is a brave, courageously brave man. Yep. He's and obviously brave. Been in Congress, and
he and John Conyers Jr.
Here's what he said. A brilliant man. This is a direct quote from John Lewis. He said, "Quote: I've heard the reasons for opposing civil marriage for same-sex couples. Cut through the distractions, and they stink of the same fear, hatred, and intolerance I have known in racism and bigotry."
Thank you, John.
That's great.
That is strong language. And I'll tell you what this shows. As a lot of people, and this is a separate show, although if you want to comment on it, it's fine by me. But a lot of people have been complaining that, President Obama's statement, he's going to lose the black vote, the black community doesn't support marriage equality. What I think the NAACP shows, what the D.C. City Council shows, that's majority African American in their vote for marriage equality, John Lewis and others show, is that A lot of black people get it. The civil rights leaders get it. People understand that if you deny civil rights for one person, you deny them for everyone. And I think that President Obama has not just set his own view, but he's actually influencing a lot of people. And I just
That was leadership on that
thank
issue.
Thank you, NAACP.
Yes.
That was leadership.
All right, we'll get back to Wall Street, but I had to thank them and to read those quotes. Those are wonderful things. Again, 202-588-0893. Let's go to Adam. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing, Phil?
We're doing great.
Hey, Adam.
Fantastic. First of all, let me also congratulate the NAACP. I think it is a courageous and outstanding move, and I'm very proud to see that come to fruition. And I, you know, yeah, kudos to the NAACP.
That's not
why I called.
I know. Before you get to your call, I just want to say one more thing. I'm sorry, because I did promise to mention him on the air. I did get an email. I won't mention his last name, but Tom from Alexandria called to say that on a WPFW show they talked about marriage equality and they didn't mention the constitutional rights. In other words, that it wasn't just state by state, but this is a federal civil right. And he wrote specifically to thank us, the Raucous Caucus, for pointing out that this is not just a state by state right. It's not just President Obama speaking, but a federal constitutional right. So thank you, Tom, for thanking us.
Thank you, Tom. Adam.
All right. Okay. Go ahead, Adam. Sorry.
Well, you know, I just wanted to comment on something that you had said about the use of violence in protest and how it's you found like a flaw in reason to be anti-war, but to use violence within protest. And I find no problem understanding or wrestling with that in my mind, and if you care to hear it, I'll tell you
why. Sure, go ahead, Adam.
Well, it's like this. When you're protesting causes like war and apartheid and human rights violations on a massive scale in the international community, you're bound to get resistance that is brutal. Brutal, man, from the state.
Mm-hmm.
The state has the monopoly on the violence. Mm-hmm. That leaves the 99% in a very precarious position. Now, the civil rights movement, like you pointed out, was largely nonviolent. You did have the Black Panther movement embrace violent tactics of protest, and they were shunned and frowned upon by mm-hmm. the black community and mm-hmm. by the civil rights movement at large, but I feel like they drove home a message, and a message lives. A lot of the gains that the civil rights movement were after, still today, are not accomplished, and they aren't complete. There's still racism and bigotry within the private sector in terms of employment, regardless of equal opportunity laws, et cetera, et cetera. And at home, just in the streets, there's still racism, there's still inequality, and distrust, and everything that the civil rights movement worked for is still here. Everything that they were fighting is still here in the United States.
Well,
Adam,
thank you for your call, Adam.
Very good point, and that is to realize that the violence that happens in any one of these, not anyone, but most movements, and when it does happen, happens because it is the establishment, the power structure that is, in fact, violent. I mean, I don't know how many times you guys have demonstrated, but I have been in repeated demonstrations that I see, and the violence begins way before usually any protester does something. It begins by the police presence. It begins by the restrictions that are placed upon you. It begins on not only the police presence, but if you've confronted them and seen them, you know, in the black garb that they're usually in with the face mask. I mean, it's out of Star Wars. Not to mention the violence and the oppression and the suppression that precedes all of these.
So if you just bring
movements.
A lightsaber, you can get through?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying the violence occurs beforehand, be it through poverty, through, you know, political oppression, economic oppression. That's the violence. Now, what happens is sometimes the reaction to that gets out of hand, but the violence begins with the power structure.
Let me hear
structure.
From Garland, and then I want to comment
say.
Myself.
Well, see, I'm totally and completely in disagreement with what the last caller was saying, because...
Not in disagreement with me.
Well, I'm always in disagreement with you, Terry.
Right,
I mean,
fine,
that's my default position. Right. I'm like Newt Gingrich. I don't know what Terry said 2 weeks ago, but I'm opposed to it.
But at you any don't rate, look like Newt.
But I got a big fat head. Think about it, a big pumpkin. But anyway, let's get back to it. And like this. This is the way I believe. I am for the use of power. I am against the use of force. Power remains power, to be power until you use it. Once you use it, it becomes force. I am against people saying, I have the authority to use force to make you or you people or whoever do what I want you to do. Now, I don't think the government should do that. But how can I say I don't think the government should do that? But Mark and Terry and I should go through, we should use force. We should break these windows. We should fight these people. We should do, the government shouldn't do it, but I should do it. To me, when you are against something, it's as much personal as it is anything else. That's why people respected King and Gandhi, because they walked the talk. They lived what they said. And if you're not living what you're saying, you can't be against violence and be violent.
I'll tell you, I understand what Adam's saying about the Black Panthers. I understand the idea in a movement you need sort of good cops, bad cops, the people who play by the rules and say, look, we really should help people in need, and the bad people saying, if I don't, those awful people, they're going to start breaking things. I get that. But at the end of the day, I will always be on the side of the quote good cops unquote, because I think that if you are known for violence, if you're known for anarchy, if you're known for going and breaking windows and things, you're just not persuasive. And you got to remember what the goal is. The goal is not go in the street and feel good shouting. That's not the goal.
Right.
That's a means, maybe, but it's not the goal. The goal is to change people's minds, whether the minds of policymakers, yeah, or even more, the minds of middle America that votes for those policymakers. And mom and pop at home are going to be, might be very persuaded by Wall Street abuses and the 99% and so forth. They're not going to be persuaded by violence. Violence never persuaded anybody. It forces people, but it doesn't persuade anybody.
We're basically in agreement on this, but
I don't like the sound of that, Terry.
Well, then I disagree with you.
Now
I'm going to hit you with something.
Right, that's right, Terry.
Well, it was nice having unity for a moment.
Let's go to other callers.
It really was.
202-588-0893. Anthony, welcome to the Rockus Caucus.
Gentlemen, how is everyone doing?
We're doing good.
Fine. Good to hear from you.
Good to be back. again, I also like to take a similar point that Mark raised earlier in praising the NAACP. But what I felt was most important was that the NAACP boiled the issue down to a matter of law, which is unfortunately not the kind of conversation we're having in the Black community. We're having a conversation about religion and about sin, both of which are basically irrelevant when you bring it to the ultimate conclusion.
Yeah, and the NAACP made clear, as Obama, as every civil rights activist has made clear, that none of this changes churches. Churches have the right to marry whomever they want. Churches often don't marry people of different religions. It does not affect church weddings. It does affect people's civil rights. But go ahead.
Absolutely. But to the discussion about Wall Street and Wall Street reform.
Yes.
To me, this is about campaign finance reform because Wall Street is so influencing our political system. We don't really have politicians who have the gumption to actually tell them what they're supposed to do, to regulate those people who actually pay them.
Anthony, so just give a few million dollars to a super PAC. That's how you do it.
I'm sorry, again?
Just give $5 or $10 million to your super PAC. And then you'll be fine, Anthony. You'll get your way.
But until we get campaign finance reform, we're not really going to get government to do the right thing whenever it comes to them colliding with industry, whatever that industry may happen to be, or when it comes to them colliding with moneyed interest, whatever that moneyed interest happens to be.
Let me ask a question regarding
Terry's point regarding taking it to the streets. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not absolving the need for the populace to quote-unquote take it to the street. But we need to take it to the street a la 2012, not, 1965. And, we need to figure out how we can use the tools that are at our disposal at this point in technology so that we can make our statements and our issues known, as opposed to just kind of being out and being present. Because again, back to the campaign finance reform issue, our government is very much bought and paid for. And us kind of just showing up outside with a sign isn't necessarily going to have the kind of effect.
Let me ask in terms of that. I'm asking everybody that, including our listeners. Why aren't we, in fact, sending emails, letters, whatever, to the Supreme Court? I know that people don't normally do that. Why are we assuming that the Supreme Court is somehow or other detached from us? Yes, we're not going to compromise their objectivity.
I don't think we're going to persuade them.
I don't know.
I think we're more likely to persuade the political branches.
They can be fired. No, wait. You're aware of the case coming up from the state of Montana, right?
Yes.
Which is significant because the state of Montana is outlawing this kind of United versus Citizens campaign. campaign.
They're going back and outlawing corporate giving again.
Yeah, they're going back, and they're being challenged, and they're trying to get it to the Supreme Court.
And if we could just get one of them to switch sides, Kennedy's own.
You know, I mean, this could be a huge turning point, and I don't see any reason. We know Congress is not going to act for quite a while, but why not go, because of this corruption, why not go directly to the Supreme Court?
It can't hurt.
Why don't we start emailing them?
You know what? I interact fairly regularly with the Republican strategists, and believe it or not, there are a lot of high-level Republican strategists who are starting to recognize that Citizens United was a bad deal for everyone.
Really?
Yes.
Well, they won't say so publicly.
No, they'll never say
because,
it.
Because it's the only thing that allows Mitt Romney to compete with President Obama, because he's got millions of people giving $20, and Romney just needs one person giving $20 million.
And it kept kooks like Santorum and Gingrich
in
the race.
That's
and,
true.
And
if
it well, was yeah. The RNC has lost, right. has lost
but
its control.
Normally, those guys would have been out early because they couldn't any vote, get any votes, but because each of them had a billionaire, they were able to stay in and continually do damage to their own
You're right, but I think Republicans are going to love it now because it's going to allow Romney, who's got a lot more billionaire friends than Obama does, to compete. All he needs is 100 people, whereas Obama still needs millions
of people.
I want to get to other callers, because I'm going to get to Tesfa, but I also want to get to James and Marvin because I really like new callers.
Okay.
But first, we do want to hear from Tesfa. Go ahead, Tesfa.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening.
A sense of justice has been lost in this country. A sense of fairness, for example, grandma's investment for her retirement, grandfather's money on Wall Street for his retirement is what's being played with.
That's true.
Yeah.
Our pensions.
Also, like, the journalists on Wall Street know what goes on, but they have lost their sense of justice. And they let it get away. And also in politics, the sense of justice has been lost to the executive and to the legislators that they invite genocidaires to their G8 meeting like Malla Zenawi of Ethiopia. Without sense of justice, without sense of fairness,
let me just finish.
A journalist, an Ethiopian journalist, went into the meeting at Reagan Building and exposed and yelled and cried for freedom and exposed the Ethiopian dictator in front of Obama and other African leaders. Look, unless we get that sense of justice, society cannot have any kind of trust. We cannot trust each other.
That's true. Okay. Thank you, Tesfa. I always appreciate when you call.
And I just want to add, because I support so much of what Tesfa says, the other issue besides justice is, frankly, compassion. Yeah. And we don't live in a compassionate era.
That's an understatement. That's one of the main reasons we need Social Security and Medicare is because they're playing with people's pensions all the time.
And he made a very good point. And you know, that's something that we didn't talk about. And all these seniors are putting in, people are putting their money in 401Ks. And, you know, Mitt Romney was saying, well, you know, somebody wins and somebody loses. Basically, it's gambling. The reality is the people that are losing are just everyday schmucks like us.
Two things. Yeah. One of the main things Bain Capital did is they would go into a company where the workers had negotiated often with a union to get really good pensions, and the first thing they would do was throw out the pensions.
But they had to make it more profitable, and that's the American religion.
Pensions are expensive,
man. American religion today is to be profitable, period. And I'm seeing that, you know, I work as a chaplain, volunteer chaplain in the church, and I'm seeing hospitals, even not-for-profit hospitals, caught up in this profit motive. Everything in this country is about profit. There's nothing else that's sacred in this country except profit.
Never ever put any of that profit back into the
And the second thing is, of course, that's why we need Social Security, because it's a guarantee. And it's nothing that I can't play with. All right, we've got a lot more callers. 202-588-0893.
Marvin,
I think you're a new caller, which we appreciate. Hello, Marvin. Welcome to the show. You're on the air, Marvin.
Yes, how you doing?
Yeah, hey, we're good. What's your comment?
Good. Okay. I mean, I just tuned into you about 15 minutes ago, and the discussion is enlightening as usual.
Thank you.
One of the callers, I want to piggyback. Terry, I heard you say that, you know, as far as the protests out here, and it's
basically the government is igniting this force on First Amendment peaceful protests.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now, if you look at all of the despair we have obtained in this country, Democrat and Republican, okay, the loss of jobs out of the U.S., okay, overseas,
yep.
Okay. If you look at more money spending on militarism,
mm-hmm.
by
yep.
both parties,
yeah.
by both parties, okay?
Yeah. What?
If you look at...
what's your point about that?
Mass incarceration now about people of color, privatizations
yep.
of prisons. You're talking about money, profit for the prison systems.
Marvin's
you know,
got it.
I mean, corporations, if you look at Walmart and all these other corporations, J.P. Morgan, all these other corporations,
mm-hmm.
we have more despair
mm-hmm.
and more,
yes.
more economic despair among the masses of the people in this country
mm-hmm.
than I've seen before my 49 years of living.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of despair out there. You're absolutely
yeah.
right.
You're going to tell me when the masses of the people cannot get basic necessities, health care, education system is crumbling, schools are closing, D.C., everywhere, okay? It's going to be more, it's more despair. So people are going to get tired, okay? And you're telling me that people should not get violent?
No, I agree with you, and let me agree with you here.
I
agree with you.
All until you got to the word violent.
Yeah, I agree with you that people, and I said months ago on here, you cannot maintain a civil society with this level of inequality. That the reason people are on some people who are on there for the NATO, you know, in the NATO protest, it isn't about NATO. It's about them being angry and feeling
sure.
despair and feeling powerless,
yes.
and that there's nothing they can do to get anyone to do anything that they to make a change, and I agree, it's just going to get worse. But I'm against the violence.
202-588-0893.
Thank you.
Let's go to James and then Martha. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, you mentioned Wall Street.
Yeah,
yes.
We certainly did.
Power, and you mentioned poverty and the power thing. Wall Street was given the power to create money in 1913. By Congress, because they were scared of a 1907 thing created in Wall Street.
The Federal Reserve was given power to create money, not Wall Street. Just want to be clear on that.
Well, Wall Street is the Federal Reserve.
They're not the same thing. The Federal Reserve is, sometimes people think they are.
Unless you're a bank and you want a loan and practically no interest.
Wall Street certainly has influence.
Sounds the same to me.
Wall Street certainly has influence on the Federal Reserve.
The Federal Reserve is not federal and are not a reserve.
Well, let me tell you what they are.
I'm with this guy.
Look, Wall Street, you can argue, has too much power over the Federal Reserve. You can argue has too much influence over
it's
the Federal Reserve.
It's not too much. It's that they have the power of money creation, which belongs to Congress and not to a private cartel of bankers.
Well,
there's about 300 of them, including
there's not 300 of them.
Goldman Sachs and
bankers, yes.
and whatnot that own the Federal Reserve.
No, that's not true. It's not true.
The Federal Reserve is controlled by
there's a Federal Open Market Committee, and it's controlled by a board of governors. It is appointed by the president. There are also members from the various banks, but the majority are chosen.
Let him say a little bit more, because
this is absolutely factually wrong.
No,
can disagree with Wall Street having too much power.
Let's hear. You're talking about the legal structure of what it's supposed to be. What he's talking about is the legal structure of what it is. Yeah, what he's talking about is the reality how it works.
If you want to say that Wall Street's lobbying too much.
Abraham Lincoln said it. Don't turn over. A government never turns over their power of money creation. It is their greatest creation power. They don't do that because it winds up in inflation. We are under a system of fractional reserve banking. So is Europe. Same deal. Mexico, Japan,
it's different
India. It's all the same. It's central banking.
Right.
And they
I'm a big believer in central banking. Because without it, we would never be able to ever have any loans.
What did we have at first? The United States Bank or something?
No, we had...
What was it called at the very
beginning?
Bank of the United States.
Right. And then we had the gold standard for a number of years, and it led to huge poverty because no one could ever get any loans for anything. Look, I will perfectly agree with you that the Federal Reserve has made a lot of errors. It's heavily influenced by Wall Street. I am not a fan of Alan Greenspan, and we could talk about what the Federal Reserve has done right or wrong. I disagree, though, that the Federal Reserve shouldn't exist. Well, I think when you say things like probably, that's the problem with Greece. They can't print their own money, and that's why they're in trouble.
And here's
now.
The other thing, too, that you can't just snatch the tires out from under a car and expect it to keep rolling. You can
reform the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, as flawed as the Federal Reserve is, our system, the foundation of our economic system is sitting on it. If you just say, let's get rid of the Federal Reserve tomorrow, you're gonna create a worldwide depression.
You can reform it. You can make it more open, more transparent.
It's not realistic to say you're going to do away with it tomorrow, right, like Ron Paul or some people.
That's all I'm saying. All right, let's go to Martha. Martha, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Oh, hi, thank you. Well, I don't have a computer and I don't have a working TV either, so maybe I'm not up with things. But I thought I heard on Democracy Now that the people in the demonstration that have been accused of having bomb-making materials or something said this stuff had been planted. And that they had beer-making materials.
Beer-making?
I hadn't heard that.
Sounds like I ought to join in. Wait a minute, Terry, I think we need to take a trip to Chicago.
I hadn't heard that.
That's my hometown, there. Don't knock Chicago.
The beer-making it is.
And then the other thing is, I don't know what violence there was or wasn't. I'm in favor of nonviolence, of course, but... What if the people that did the violence were infiltrated?
Well, exactly. It's important. The vast majority of protesters were nonviolent.
Yep.
The vast majority were peaceful. If they were a little disorganized and not very clear in their message, they certainly were nonviolent. And my point is that
Let me ask you this. How many cops were injured?
I think one. One cop.
How
had
many
a knife
protesters
pulled on
were injured?
I'm sure several
Lots.
Dozen.
Who's violent?
Well, look, here's the thing about it. There is no question that if when you're dealing with law enforcement, that if there are any, even close to possibly being an issue, that things are going to get out of hand and that all too often they're going to do things that they're not supposed to. That's one of the reasons I'm for nonviolence. Well, even if things don't get out of hand, they're going to do things they aren't supposed to.
All I'm saying, I'm not here. You get the message across better with not. One of the best things about the Selma Bridge is that no one had any doubt over who were the nonviolent people. The children marching across the bridge were not a threat to the police. Yeah. They did not. The water cannons were a threat to the children, and they made it very, very clear. When you blur that line, they're going to be people that only see the violence from the protesters. Yeah. And the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, was very, very disciplined and organized, because I guarantee you there were people there who wanted to be violent, who were very angry for very good reason, and yet he managed that discipline that I'd like to
know
see more.
Do you know of a specific violent act of any significance whatsoever that one of the demonstrators in Chicago made? Now, I know that there was pressure, there was noise, there was possibility.
Somebody pulled a knife on the police. That's according to the press reports. I wasn't there.
But still, we don't know that they did, and we don't know that the police were completely wrong.
I wasn't
completely
there.
Right. We don't know that.
I'm
not going to take the position that the police were right in what they did and that they were only
responding. I just think it was ineffective. I think that the Occupy Wall Street movement has been more effective than the Occupy Chicago movement. That's all I'm saying. All right, let's go to Al. Al, welcome to the Raucous
Caucus. We haven't got much time, Al, but we're glad you're on the air.
Welcome.
Oh, how you doing, Jim?
We're good.
I got a comment, and I won't be as long as Tesla.
We've only got about a minute.
And that is, Terry, pension, what the hell is that? And I'm not a jaywalker. Talk to you gentlemen later.
Tension?
What?
Wait. No, that was too short. I missed it.
Yeah, that was too short,
too. Was that an inside joke?
I don't know.
Was it a stake thing?
Not inside my brain.
What
I don't know.
What is a pension? Pension. Oh. That's what the kids don't even know what a pension is.
A pension.
Oh, pension. I thought he said tension.
I thought he said tension, too. Pension.
Yes. What is it? 37% of workers now have a retirement or something like that?
I'm glad he talked about pensions, because people need to understand how Bain worked. People say, well, it's destructive capitalism and it's just part of the economy and it's being defended. What these companies have done is they've used really a loophole in the bankruptcy law that we need to close. Unions get out there and they negotiate for benefits. Yep. And a lot of times unions negotiate not for current benefits, for future benefits. Things like pensions, to make sure that they're working. Because there used to be a time 40 years ago in America where you worked for a company for 40 years and you got a gold watch and you got a decent pension. Let's All right. So there used to be that time, and so they negotiated for pensions, but the problem is under bankruptcy law, that's the first thing you can rob. So companies then promise the world, sure, we'll give you a pension, sure, we'll give you a pension.
As soon as they go bankrupt.
They don't fund the pension.
And then along comes Bain.
And Bain loads them up with a bunch of debt.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're paying back their creditors, and they're not paying their pensions.
Well, just the other day, Cory Booker, the Newark, New Jersey mayor, made some statements that were could be considered stabbing the Obama administration in the back by people such as me. But here's
it's hard, though, because I like Cory Booker
much. But you know what? He stabbed him in the back. But here's the thing that I found out. The thing that we always, and Terry always talks about how poisonous and how much the tentacles of this Wall Street money are kind of all throughout politics.
Yep.
Then I find this guy's basically defending Bain Capital, and we find out he got $25,000 or $35,000 from Bain Capital.
Oh, he sells his soul
it
cheap.
It all goes back to what Anthony was saying.
Meet the press. Campaign Capital. You know? How dare you attack these saintly gentlemen who are out there making a better society.
It all goes back to corporate money. It all goes back to the fact that we need to get rid of Citizens United and we need to take back our country. And we need to have more radio stations like WPFW that don't rely on corporate money.
And more shows like Rock
and Caucus. And you don't need a TV and you don't need cable if you listen to WPFW.
We are out of time. This is Mark Levine with
Terry D. Kester.
And Marilyn Nixon.
And you can find this on Facebook and everything. We will be here next week. Don't miss the Raucous Caucus.
Yes.